Evening, fellow Tims, and welcome back to the Trinity Tims for our latest installment of this week's podcast. As usual, I'm joined by my colleagues, Joe McHugh from Video Cells, and James Forrest from sunny Tenerife at the moment. So, pardon us if the reception is a little bit sketchy over in Tenerife. James has got the shades on, sun is shining, he's just off the back of a boat trip. So, things are looking good over there. I hope he's enjoying himself. We've got a packed agenda this evening. Obviously, there's been plenty happening in the world of Celtic over the last week or so. Not much in the transfer front, other than the acquisition of Shin Yamada, who we have yet to see play. He didn't get a run out on Saturday, which was to be expected. Obviously, it was probably a bit too soon for him. I'm obviously Eric Nott of Reed Celtic, in case anybody out there doesn't know me. So the first thing we're going to chat about on this evening show is our game against Newcastle on Saturday, and a lot of positives to take out of that game, especially when you consider we started the first half with a lot of fringe players. I certainly have to say that Austin Trusty and Dane Murray didn't look out of place in the center of defense, but in general, all over the park, we played pretty well. We acquitted ourselves very well in the first half, coming out 2-0 on top at halftime. Obviously, there was a massive gaffe from the Newcastle goalkeeper, which gave us our second goal and allowed Johnny Kenny to sneak in behind him and slot it into the bottom corner. So, the Pope did us a favour just before halftime. And obviously, then there was a lot of fallout from the behaviour of the Newcastle fans and how they sort of decided to represent the other side of Glasgow in terms of the way they behaved at Celtic Park on Saturday, and which wasn't, necessary, really. I would have always thought that the Newcastle fan base were an all right fan base. I didn't expect them to behave like that when they came to Celtic Park, and I didn't expect them to lean on the other side of town for their hospitality as such, so, but it is what it is. So I will go over to Joe first to have a chat with him and see what his thoughts are on the game on Saturday. How did you feel the game against Newcastle panned out, Joe?
It shows that the manager's pretty good with players. He knows how to get them organised. He knows how to get them fit. He knows how to get them up to scratch. We have got a very, very, very good midfield. We've got six strong options in midfield. And look, McCowan and Paul Bernardo are the fifth and sixth choices, or sixth and fifth choices. But there's four strong contenders in there for starting places. So that's one area of the team that's in good nick. It'd be good if the other areas of the team were just as strong. But over the piece, it was as good a workout as you can get. It shows that the manager, despite the noise, despite the lack of support, he's getting on with things. Yamada is... I would be amazed if Celtic sign a left-back now. It's going to be very, very difficult to attract a good quality left-back as backup to Kieran Tierney. And as a fallback, the best we can do is have someone at the club already ready to step in. It's not ideal, but Yamada... coming on for 20 minutes in most matches, playing a League Cup tie to give Tierney a rest, maybe playing some home SPFL matches between European ties, that's as good as it's going to get. I don't think there's any chance of getting a good quality backup coming in. We had Greg Taylor, who would have done the job well, but I think Yamada has got that position. Up front, there's various things happening. Johnny Kenny has had a very, very good week. He came on at half-time against Sporting Lisbon and started. I wouldn't read anything into players starting and players being on the bench. Everyone's getting time to play. Against Ajax and the other match in Como, the team will start to take a bit of shape. But Kenny has come up from nowhere. He's having a very good pre-season. And Ida is hot and cold. Clearly, there's a lot of supporters that can't stand the guy, are waiting for him to fail. But with that, I think Kenny is probably going to stay at Celtic. I don't think he'll be going out on loan, because he's probably going to see more game time than anticipated, unless there is this big striker that some people seem to think is going to arrive. I don't see the big striker arriving, because we've got Maeda, we've got Ida, we've got Kenny, we've got Yamada. you can get Osmond. Osmond is not going to get near a Celtic game this season unless there's 3 or 4 strikers down injured. Very noisy out there, James. I don't know what's going on. But the squad is shaping up pretty well. The manager's got on with doing his job. He's getting the players fit and ready. And it'd be nice if we got a bit of support. We're losing another couple of wingers. Probably won't be noticed. Palma's disappearance won't be noticed. Telio's had a couple of cameos, but he's not going to be a guy that you'd throw on or have involved in the Champions League. And if Yang leaves, so what? If his goal against Newcastle adds some value to him, great. But he's never going to be a starter. It's a regular starter. He's had 2 years to try at it. James Forrest is still miles ahead of him. So, it's reasonably half full. It was a couple of good workouts. The squad's looking well. The manager's getting on with his job. Just leave it to other people to go on with their job. So, that's it from over here. I'll pass to James.
Hopefully it's a game that gets a lot of people off Austin Trusty's back. Because I thought he had an absolutely outstanding game. Enamura at left back. It's surprising the hell out of me. You can't judge him too much on a game against Ross County. You can't judge him on a good performance against Port Lisbon and a good performance against Newcastle. He might have something to offer, but I'm starting to worry that Joe's right about the left-back situation. The fact that this guy's had a couple of good games does not mean that he can do the job on those big occasions with Tierney. Maybe isn't available. So, yeah, I'd be concerned if we decided to take that risk. People also need to remember that Scales has played at left-back and has played pretty well as left-back for Aberdeen. But it's a big ask to be able to do the same for Celtic. So we have options at the club for that position. I still think we need to fill it. You're right about Johnny Kenny. I thought he was excellent as well. I thought he'd done absolutely brilliant again. In fact, they three were my standards. I thought they three stood out above everybody else for the performances. I also like to look at Arnie. Arnie had a really good game. And again, maybe some people will get off his back for a wee while. Big idea could have done with putting one in the net, but I'm starting to think that there's nothing that big guy can do that will get people off his back. So, short of scoring 50 goals, I don't know that there's any way to do it. We're talking about signings as well, though, right? Nagano looks a class act. I'm really glad we've got him for such a good fee. Shin Yamada, we've not seen yet, but Rogers says all the right things about him. That he's been signed for pace, for strength, for power. They're the Rogers check boxes. And that's good enough for me. I'm happy with that signing. I've been happy with that signing anyway. But Rogers seems to know what he wants to do with the guy. That's good enough. I've wrote about this the other day. Yamada is in the absolute best possible position to succeed because he's arrived with expectations really low, a really low transfer fee, no pressure on him. Ida will get all the pressure. If Yamada even matches Ida's goals for the season, that will be seen as a success on his part. And Adam will be called a failure, even if they score 40 each. That's how it's going to be. His fee will count in his favour. Adam's will always count against him. That's life. That's life for Celtic. That's how it's going to be for Adam Ida. He's always going to have to wear the transfer fee. Sad but true. The performance overall was excellent. Rogers again continues to show that he has no equal. In spite of what some people in the media seem to be suggesting. And every single person at the club should be working flat out to get this guy to stay as long as possible. The fact that he is still able to perform consistently well, get the best out of players, even though his own situation is still up in the air, is an absolute miracle. Guy is a diamond that we cannot afford to let him leave. Simple as that. The Newcastle fans, they had a pretty abysmal day. They had a pretty abysmal day. Somehow they've suffered into this whole Ibrox is your friend. The Ibrox fans are your friends. The Ibrox fans don't have any friends. They have allies of convenience. That is all. That is all. That's what they believe in. And they brought the Newcastle fans up there today, that my big brother's coming to bother you, and they suffered what Arden Welsh and one fabulous moment in Trainspotting called humiliation by proxy. Not only did they suffer, but they watched their big brother get battered on us. So excellent. It could not have went better. The sight, all the pictures, all their fans on top of the Boston Bar roof and all that, that made my afternoon when I saw it after the game. Some people were sending me them before the game. Another look at them until after this game. But after the game, yeah, they made the afternoon even better. It was a good day. It was a good day's work for the whole team.
Yeah, definitely it was. James, it sounds like there's a Greek wedding going on in the background there, wherever you are. Are people spinning plates and sending them flying across the room?
I'm in a coffee shop, believe it or not. I'm in a coffee shop in the hotel.
I don't know. Like, are they just literally throwing stuff on over the place there or what?
Reasonably quiet.
Yeah. Well, mic is picking up. Yeah, you've got a powerful mic on that phone anyway. I mean, in fairness, it was a very good performance. We made an EPL side look pretty mediocre. I think the difference was that we showed up to the races. They didn't. I don't think they took the threat that we were bringing seriously. And they were made to look pretty ordinary on the day, as were their fans, to be fair as well. But yeah, look, overall, I think if you compare and contrast our warm-up and our pre-season to the club across the city, we've prepared very well in terms of the way that we've set ourselves
very
up.
Well.
Games like this have been, you know, we talked about it last week. We thought they'd be tough. We thought it would be hard for us to get a result in Lisbon. We got a result in Lisbon. We also thought that it would be hard to get a result against Newcastle. That turned out to be a hell of a lot easier than we expected. And, you know, I think some of those Newcastle players were probably walking away thinking that, all right, fair enough, this isn't exactly my grand could do better sort of league after a game like that, you know. So yeah, look, I think it's very good. Good preparation. We'll see now how things go out in Como in the next couple of games that we're going to play. Obviously, we have our season starting in 2 weeks' time with the opening fixture against St. Mirren. Which brings me along to our next point on the agenda, which is we are still a week on. Well, we are a week on from last week's podcast, where we all said that it was probably going to be a big week in terms of signings for the club. We have one more signing in the door, which we expected, which was Shin Yamada. Transfer spending to date is £2.7 million. Chris Sutton on Saturday made the point that, you know, there has been no replacement put in place for Matt O'Reilly, Kyogo Furuhashi, or Nicholas Kuhn. We've bagged over £50 million for those three players, and we have spent £2 million in this transfer window. And that, to me, is unacceptable. It's not good enough. It's just not good enough at this point. 2 weeks away from the opening game of the season and just probably 4 weeks away from that Champions League game. We have a hell of a month ahead of us in August. We have two serious away fixtures. Yeah. We've got to go to Pittodrie and we've got to go to Ibrox. And sandwiched in between that is our Champions League qualifier. It's, as months come, opening months coming this season, they couldn't come any tougher than this. So we really, really do need to see some movement in the next week or two in the transfer window. My belief is that if we don't see movement in the transfer window in the next couple of weeks, it's highly unlikely we're going to see any big moves before this transfer window closes. So, Joe, I'll pass over to you. What's your opinion on the current state of affairs when it comes to transfers? Oh, with the addition of Shin Yamada, which we expected anyway.
Shin Yamada isn't a first-team starter, so it's doubtful, dubious that you can say he's much of an addition. This squad needs first-team starters. They're down to about 12, 14 reliable players. He used 13 players away to Bayern Munich in the Champions League. The subs were Yang and Ida. And from that squad, we've lost Schlupp, who's replaced by Tierney. We've lost Nicholas Kuhn. So the squad is down, and Jota's also injured. So the squad is badly down. But I think we touched on it last week. The fact that the team is doing well in pre-season matches mean that the complacency in the boardroom is justified. They'll be patting themselves on the back saying, see, we told you so. So the team badly needs two wingers. Dyson Maeda's covering two jobs just now. And as we saw in the final stretch into last season, he can't be relied on. It's asking too much for Maeda to play 90 minutes every game, every week, every 3-4 days. So two wingers are badly needed. That's definitely a priority. As I said, the midfield is sorted. We've got six options there. Hopefully there's no departures. That might be the bigger issue, watching out for departures rather than hoping to see players arriving. So the players are needed, but I think we're getting close to that territory where you can start saying, well, the players we were talking to, they're wanting to hedge their bets to see if we reach the Champions League or not. And again, that's just the usual excuses put out by those inside the club, and then they've got their faithful messengers to pass that on. So whoever it has to be done this week, anyone signing really needs to spend some time with the team in Como and then have a full week's preparation for St Mirren. Beyond that, it's getting too late to integrate players in. And they say that timeline is soon kicking in where players won't commit, agents won't commit, because you want to see how Celtic do it in the Champions League playoff. If successful, the prices will go up. If unsuccessful, then the targets and players we're looking at, you didn't fancy coming to Scotland and playing in the Europa League. We've been through the script many times before, so I would like to think there'll be somebody coming in. Balak Wisha is probably slightly closer, but if you're sitting here in a week's time talking about Balak Wisha, it wouldn't be the greatest of surprises. So it doesn't appear as if anything is imminent. We're playing Ajax in 3 nights' time. I don't expect anyone new to be in the squad for that match. Over to you, James.
Well, you guys are right to highlight the players who we've sold and not replaced, right? But there's an even weirder fact to consider. We haven't even spent as much money as we brought in for the Jeremy Frimpong selling clause. That's a pile of money that's sitting there that hasn't been touched, or virtually untouched. No one spent that much money. So the idea of the manager being back, being supported, is ludicrous right now. And we keep on hearing how there's a long way of this window to go, but there's not even any sign that anything's imminent. I mean, I don't trust 85% of what I read in the newspapers. If it comes from certain people who have got some kind of inside track with the club, then you know there's something possibly in it. Almost everything we read is nonsense. Like the Romanian striker, that was a story that came out of Romania. Robbie Nott came out of the Romanian Keith Jackson. We don't know how bad the standards are in these other countries. Probably not as bad as they are here, to be quite honest, but probably not great. So that story came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden we were dragging our feet and we were haggling over the transfer fee until their own chairman admit that we didn't even make a bid. So whatever interest they think we had didn't even go up to the point where we made an offer. So almost all of it's crap. So I choose not to believe almost all of it. But amidst all the noise, there is usually one or two stories that are nailed on and that develop over a couple of weeks. And there's none at all right now. I mean, it's almost certainly the next player that we sign will be somebody who's not been in the public domain, who's not been mentioned anywhere. But it needs to happen soon. It needs to happen soon. Because although 50,000 fans turned up for the Newcastle friendly, we're only a couple of bad results at the start of the season away from people being really, really pissed off. And the manager will continue to work miracles, the team on the pitch will continue to work miracles. But it's a piss take asking to keep on doing it with the same players. And over the course of this season, that will not stand at all. It just won't. It will not work. There's far too many games to play. There are far too many teams who have improved for us to reliably go into the same squad and try and rely on the same players. I wrote a piece the other day about The Last Dance. And if Rodgers is going to go and some of these other, and some of these top players are going to go at the end of this season, then they have to put on a show for us. And they will be the core guys that he builds the team around. But that has to be, that has to be the situation. Build the team around. That building has to start right now. Right now. So that if Rodgers goes and if some of these guys go with him, we've got the core of the next good Celtic team already in place. And then these guys just don't think ahead at all. They're just incapable of that kind of forward plan, and that's what needs to happen. And I'm still worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, Irishman and Porto's comment there again, you know, he thinks that the board are waiting to see if we get into the Champions League and also to see what happens across the city. Now, obviously, I wrote an article yesterday with regards to the game tomorrow night at Ibrox and how that will possibly define their season. And I, what I suppose I said
that
in that...
That will define their season, absolutely.
What I said is that if they do manage, which is highly unlikely considering the preseason they've had in comparison to ours, if they do manage to qualify for the Champions League, they will spend some of that money. The thing is, if we don't qualify for the Champions League, which the board is putting us at risk of not doing, all spending will cease and desist at Celtic Park. They'll decide they're not spending at all. And so I have to agree with what Irishman and Porto was saying. There's definitely a distinct feeling that they're waiting to see what happens in the Champions League. And that's, again, that's like we said last week, that's Russian roulette, that's gambling. It's taking big risks. So, I mean, what do you think, Joe? Is that your view? Do you think that's what they're going to do?
Oh, yeah. The one guarantee is Celtic will make a surplus this transfer window. That is an absolute nailed-on certainty. James, I don't believe the Frimpong stories. I don't believe there's a 20% sell-on clause. When Frimpong joined Celtic from Man City, the Manchester Evening News says that Man City had a 30% sell-on clause on Frimpong's deal, and some people seem to think that Celtic then had a 20 or 30% sell-on clause in the Bayer Leverkusen deal. At that time, I don't think Celtic had a strong negotiating hand. I reckon the standard 10%, which is very nice, very tasty, so there's a profit to be had there, but Celtic will make a profit in this transfer window. That's the key thing for the board. And if they reach the Champions League, then if they reach the Champions League, they'll be patting themselves in the back. If they don't reach the Champions League, they'll do all efforts to sell Maeda or Hatate, and they'll tell us that they were angling to go just as Kyogo was angling to go. So what happens across the city, what happens in the Champions League, doesn't have any big impact. Celtic won't be spending big money. They won't be spending decent money. Anything that is spent will be less than the amount of money comes in. And as usual, they'll cross their fingers and hope that it turns. They get the usual autumn fun at Ibrox where things go upside down. So it's a terrible way to run a club, basing yourself on always being a little bit better than a club formed in 2012. But we've watched it for years. The only time there's been decent ambition by Celtic was in 2021. That was driven by Ange Postecoglou and his agent, Frank Tremboli. They hung around for 2 years and then they got out because they know the way things drift at Celtic. The bottom line is always the bottom line, the balance sheet. So James seems to have some distractions. What's your expectations on players joining and how much of that is dependent on
She's
the Champions
quite
distracting,
League? I must admit. I agree with you. I think they probably are going to wait and see. I think they're probably going to play wait and see. It's minimum that they're actually willing to take a chance at. We've all said the same thing about this. The reward is so high that the risk just isn't worth it. I mean, give the manager the basic, replace Nicholas Kuhn, there you go. Just get that one job done and send us in there at least with a team that's of the same strength as the one that played Bayern Munich. But to go in again, the Champions League qualifier, we're a weaker side than that. It's unforgivable. It's beyond belief that they're willing to take a chance at that. And if they go out, as you say, Joe, that is what they will say. Oh, we had no choice. These players wanted to leave because we didn't get to the Champions League. Whose fault was that? Honestly, it's almost as if we're not allowed to have too many nice things. Almost as if they want to let us have too many nice things. They don't want us to have too many nice things. There's no reason why we can't have done this. Nicholas Kuhn should have been replaced 2 weeks ago. Nicholas Kuhn, his replacement should have been signed before he was sold. If we are having problems negotiating with clubs who we were in talks with, that's why. He sold the player first. It's just stupid. It's mental. Absolutely mental. I don't understand the way we do things at all. It's so backward and so small-C conservative. It's so cautious. And it costs us time and time again. And I hope this isn't going to be one of the things, because you will get people like me who don't want to leave if we go out, which is not impossible.
Well, like we said, I think the next 2 weeks or so are critical. If any action is going to happen in the transfer market, it'll happen in the next 2 weeks. If it doesn't, we realistically have to face into that Champions League qualifier with what we have, which is not going to be easy. Depending, obviously, I mean, if we get a favourable draw in terms of who we end up playing, that might work in our favour. But again, it's so many ifs, buts and maybes in a situation where you shouldn't be risking. We shouldn't be taking any risks. We should be fully insulating the manager to be able to, you know, put a team out on the park that will win that qualifier easily. Because of the reward, as we've discussed, that's available, the reward that's on offer in terms of finance. So, look, we'll move on from that subject because it's a subject we discuss on a regular basis. And I think, look, we need to talk about the newspaper article last week there regarding Strachan. Was asked for his opinion on Brendan Rodgers, and he said that he suspects that he'll be gone by the end of this season. That a lot of people, I wrote an article on it Friday evening, Joe followed it up, James, you followed it up. A lot of people were under the impression that Gordon Strachan has no skin in the game and he knows nothing and so on and so forth. But for me, that's kind of an alarming situation. Where somebody who has connected with the club, who was supposed to be, you know, in some sort of advisor, I don't know, was he in some sort of advisory capacity to Dermot Desmond still, that he received some sort of money from the payroll at Celtic. His son, Craig Strachan, is a scout at Celtic, and his other son, obviously, is part of the first team coach setup. Joe, what's your opinion on this whole situation that we kind of saw unfold on Friday evening?
It's a strange one. While he was Celtic manager, Gordon Strachan had nothing but utter contempt for the media. He detested every last element of it. Just the scorn that he had. Once he's no longer the Celtic manager, once he's no longer the Scotland manager, he'll sing like a canary if the money's right. So the latest one was on one of these obscure gambling websites. And all they do is they get a big enough check and Strachan will talk about Celtic. He'll talk about the club across the city. He'll talk about Leeds United. He'll talk about Man United. He'll talk about anything if the money's right. So that's the sort of character that Gordon Strachan is. I don't think he gets direct instructions from Dermot Desmond, but folk are right to put two and two together with Gavin Strachan. I mean, he must have some contact with him. And I don't think anyone would want their father discussing their workplace. It's not a very smart move. Gordon Strachan talking about the timeline. Brendan Rodgers was Celtic manager for 2.5 years, left and decided to come back on a 3-year contract. So Brendan Rodgers knows a bit more about what he's thinking about than Gordon Strachan. Strachan's trying to guess at it, compare it to his own time. Strachan had 2 pretty good seasons at Celtic. The third season, it was wobbling a wee bit, but the team came back and won the league. And the fourth season was a bit of a disaster. So it's not particularly the individual, it's not the manager. Time had ran out in Gordon Strachan at Celtic. He didn't have anything new to refresh the club with. There was 2 Champions League last 16s, which were great, but the team was on its uppers. The last two games that Strachan was in charge of was a nothing each draw away to Hibs and a nothing each draw at home to Hearts. If Celtic won both of those games 1-0, they'd have won four in a row. So Strachan's well out of touch. It's suspicious and iffy, but I don't think you get any direct instructions from someone inside Celtic to say, start painting the picture about why Brendan Rodgers should leave. But it's just Strachan's got wee guy syndrome. He's always got to the say, he's always got to nib in. And if there's a check involved, so much the better. So he really ought to be concentrating on Dundee, where Stephen Presley's turning out to be the disaster that absolutely everyone expected. I mean, can you imagine Stephen Presley walking into the dressing room and trying to impress players? I mean, Simon Murray would take one look at him and have a good laugh. I'm sure the players are laughing and impersonating Stephen Presley behind his back. He's the most boring man. Stephen Presley and Kevin Thompson doing dual commentary would be an absolute nightmare. But that's the type of guy that Dundee have put in charge. That's Gordon Strachan's judgment. So I'll part Gordon Strachan's judgment. Brendan Rodgers knows what's happening. And if the Celtic board properly backed Brendan Rodgers, I suspect he'd be quite happy to stay on for another season or two. But in the current circumstances, when he's getting no support whatsoever, we were told in January that Kyogo was angling for a move. Kyogo was sold and we're still waiting for a replacement. Yamada is not a Kyogo-type replacement. We were told when Nicholas Kuhn left that Como had been in touch with Nicholas Kuhn towards the end of last season. Celtic knew it was happening and there's still no replacement for Nicholas Kuhn. So Brendan Rodgers is not getting backing from the Celtic board. Most of them would be quite happy to have someone less ambitious, someone more agreeable to their thoughts in charge, somebody that thinks that playing in the Europa League is a great achievement and we should look forward to those Thursday nights under the lights. So Gordon Strachan, kick him into touch. He's an irritant, he's a pest, he's a pain, but I don't think he's getting word from inside Celtic Park. It's just the type of character that he is. Over to Tenerife.
Unfortunately,
Strachan, indeed. Strachan shouldn't be commenting on the Celtic manager at all. It comes very close to breaking the unspoken covenant that former managers have. As I said in the piece I wrote yesterday, where I actually thought that Strachan was the one who said what Nevin had said, which is why that article came down last night, because I got that totally wrong. But the point of the article was basically sound, which is why I put a better version up this morning. Strachan shouldn't be talking about that at all. He should keep his mouth shut about it. The unspoken covenant that exists. The managers do not talk about, ex-managers don't talk about current managers. It's undermining, it creates negative headlines, causes problems for everybody. And it's not the first time that Strachan's done it. Lennon used to do it with players and it used to drive me nuts. Strachan talking about the manager is even worse. And Strachan's comments are even more stupid because he is seen as some kind of Celtic insider. He's one of the friends of the man, right? He has two sons who work inside the club. So it's not a crazy suggestion that Strachan knows something and has blabbed something that he shouldn't have blabbed. Nevin has great idea that we should appoint Damien Duff. This is the kind of garbage we're going to have to put up with. This is it for the whole season. And I can't understand why people like Tierney and that are saying that this is a big deal. This is the only thing people are going to be talking about. It's nuts to pretend otherwise. Until Rodgers signs a new deal, this is all people will speculate on. And not only will it be speculation about how the team is affected and where Rodgers might end up, we're going to start hearing names, a steady drip, drip, drip of names. And this is only the first one. And part of this is going to be to try and soften us up to the idea that Rodgers has already got one foot in the door and that the conversation to be his successor should be already underway. And I'm not playing that. I really don't want to play that game. Our focus should be on keeping the manager we've got, not worrying about who might be next. I'm worried about who might be next, by the way. But it's not something I want to discuss every week. It's not something any should be discussing every week. Because the important thing is to make sure that Rodgers is not and he put pressure on the people who can't get Rodgers to agree to an extension. But the minute we start talking about replacements, it's as if we've accepted that Rodgers' time here is finished, and basically we're planning the funeral, planning the exit, and the coronation of the next king. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do any of that. I don't want to play that game. It's easy for me to say that I wish all these people would just shut up and cease with this nonsense. But they won't, because this is the nonsense. This is what our whole season will be about, like it or not. And everybody in Celtic must know this. And they must know there is no way to put this story to bed until we put it to bed properly. It's crazy to me that anybody thinks that this could just go on for a year, that we can get through this season, and that this story will just die down and go away. It won't. There's no way that will happen. The media won't let it happen for a start. And then the first couple of bad results, it's going to be Rodgers' mind as elsewhere. And you know that's what's going to happen. You all know that's what's going to happen. Mental.
Yeah, but the reality is, and I discussed this yesterday in an article that I did, when I said that Brendan Rodgers, if he has decided that this is his last season, he will want to ensure that his legacy at Celtic is bulletproof. He will want to win nothing less than a treble for the club. Because he'll want to do that, not for the board, but in spite of the board, to prove to them what it is that they're letting walk out the door when the time comes. But not only that, he's going to want to do as well as he can in the Champions League. Obviously, he's going to get into it. And if he does get into it, he's going to want to do as well as he can so that he can prove that he is well able to manage in that competition, and that puts him in the shop window for an EPL club that's in the Champions League. Because, look, if Rodgers is not going to stay at Celtic, it's pretty clear where he's going to go. It'd be very unlikely that he would go anywhere else other than the EPL again. So there's an awful lot at stake for Brendan Rodgers in this upcoming season as well. Not just for, you know, his what would you say, it being his final season. There's an awful lot at stake for his legacy and how he walks away from the club if he does walk away from the club. He's going to give it his all because he's a highly professional individual. And he wants to prove to Celtic fans that he was there to win for them, not the board, but he was there to win for them. And prove to the fans that I said I would give it 3 years. I've given it 3 years. I've landed you as many trophies as I possibly could. I would have liked to have stayed longer, but that just wasn't on the cards. And I think that's the reality of the situation here. Unless our board proves us wrong in the coming weeks and tells us Brendan Rodgers is staying on, this is what's happening. They won't even tell us that anyway. They won't tell us if he's leaving, if he's staying, what, we'll just be left in the dark. And then we'll be given some story towards the end of the season when it's all done and dusted. So, look, that's my view on it. I don't think we need to flesh it out any more than we have, because it's starting to look more and more likely that this is the way that things are going to go. But the one thing I think we can be confident of is that Brendan Rodgers will be pulling out the stops, all the stops, to ensure that this season is his best. Because if he doesn't do that, he doesn't leave a rock-solid legacy at Celtic, that's going to hamper his chances in the future. And if he has one eye on the future, that's what he's going to be looking at. So we move on to our next subject on the agenda, and that's Tuesday night's game, obviously tomorrow night's game at Ibrox. Do we feel that it's going to have any impact on the season ahead in terms of the challenge that the Ibrox side will present to us? And do we feel that they have any chance against Panathinaikos? So I'll pass that one over to you, Joe. What's your thoughts on tomorrow night and what kind of impact it could have on the season ahead?
I don't know much about Panathinaikos, but I would hope that they're competent and that there's a big target, there's a big prize, there's a big bonus for them of getting through. So you get through this round and you'll at least reach the group stage of the Europa League. You lose out at this stage and you tumble into a Europa League qualifier, and you lose that, you tumble into a Conference League qualifier. So there's a high stake for Panathinaikos. Hopefully their toxic fans can do their thing. Despite all the spin that's appearing online, I think there's a decent amount of their support that can't stand Russell Martin and will be happy to be proved right. And when that team lineup's announced tomorrow night with Jack Butland, Captain Tav, Kieran Dowell and all the rest of them, there's going to be a few grumbles. So I don't you'd be a fool to put any sort of money on this. Neither of the two teams has got any form. Obviously, you hope that Panathinaikos give them a good scalping, but we've been wishing for that many a time and been let down. So, cautiously optimistic that things catch up with the Russell revolution. In terms of season, I'm not sure, because the Europa League could be easier, more comfortable for them. I mean, if they did fluke it through three rounds of qualifiers, I think they'd get battered silly again in the Champions League. They'd have used up all their double sixes if they get through three qualifiers. So, I mean, the other thing we've mentioned at the end of last season, no one has left Ibrox on a transfer fee. They are all sticking by their contracts. The Record claimed yesterday that Robin Proper's got 3 years left in his deal. I think that'll be a mistake for the Record, but if he's only got 2 years left in his deal, he'll be staying around. Just as Ben Davies, Jose Cifuentes, he's got a couple of years, Rabi Matondo, all sorts. So it's almost physically impossible for them to add to their squad. I think they're a good bit over 30 as it stands. So any additions will be hard work to do. So it's a nice distraction, and hopefully everything goes as badly wrong for them as possible. But our sights really should be a bit higher. Our sights should be in having a Champions League squad ready to breeze through a qualifier and ready to improve in last season. And that really needs three first-team starters coming into the squad, not projects, not fourth-choice strikers coming in from Japan. So it'll be a nice distraction, or hopefully it'll be a nice distraction, but I don't see how much it impacts on our season. Our season is defined by our directors and their complete lack of ambition, and that ambition is to stay ahead of their friends at Ibrox rather than pushing ahead and saying, we get 12 points in the Champions League last season, let's see how we can get 13, 14 or 15 in the season ahead. But I suspect that conversation won't be getting had when Nicholson, Lil and their cronies head out to Como this week for a right good few days' jollies. James!
Well, in terms of how this impacts their season, if they don't win the more tonight comfortably, they are in a lot of trouble. Because if they've got to go over there in Greece and play in 35 degree heat, they're going to get down. I don't know if you guys have seen the Europa League draw that they've got if they go out in this tie. Their Europa League opponents will be Shakhtar Donetsk or Besiktas. So they're in a lot of trouble. Either of those teams is capable of beating them in the Europa League, which opens up the unthinkable scenario. They tumble into a Conference League qualifier, which could not be more important if the Ibrox mortgage was riding on it. If they go to the Conference League, then they may as well fold up the Big Ten and give it up for this year, because that club will be in free fall all over again. The financial disaster will be equaled only by the pressure that Russell Martin will be under to pack his pencils and books and beat it after just a few months. So the free fall situation, the free fall possibility is very possible at this point if there was this tie. I don't know what he's doing over there. I've got to be honest. I'm looking at the signings he's making, and they don't make a lot of sense. They do fit the big physical strong pattern, but Asgard's a weird one, because all us football manager long-term players know him very well. And we don't sign him for big teams because he gets injured all the time. And I don't know if that's based on like real life stats. I don't know if he's injury prone in real life or whether that's just a database error. But it's a database error that stopped him through four or five iterations. And I was not shocked to see that he's injured already. So it doesn't make a lot of sense, the players that they've signed. But I'll tell you what makes even less sense. The fact that they've dispensed from any pre-season preparations. One game in front of fans. That's bonkers. If you were trying to put your team in a bad position going into this game, that's how you would do it. So I really don't know what it is he's doing. I really don't get it. But he's made a noose for his own neck already, because if they go out and then they have to play one of the two teams just to get into the Europa League, they are in a lot of trouble. And their season could not possibly get off to a worse start. I mean, Panathinaikos was the tie they wanted to avoid here. That's pretty much the tie they wanted to avoid in the Europa. So it's already difficult. And the Champions League drop that they've got for the next round is fairly straightforward if they get through. Panathinaikos are a better side than the other two teams, than the two teams they play in the next round if they get through. But, you know, you can rule nothing out with this lot. You can rule nothing out. Panathinaikos should be good enough to beat them. And then they're basically in a crap show. And their whole season hinges on whether they can get through in the Europa League. Because if they don't go through into the Europa League, sure, they've got a good chance of picking up a lot of coefficient points, which will benefit us when we win the league. But the financial consequences will be absolutely immense, and they will be paying for it this whole entire season. So I'm looking forward to tomorrow to see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I read Keith Jackson's piece on it today, and I had to laugh at it where he said,
You know, the Leafs have been shuttled already. Because people don't get kind of weight stick the next Sunday.
No, they can't. And it seems like Jackson is rallying the troops already to turn on him, basically saying that if they're 2-0 down at halftime, that Russell is going to be sweating through his eyeballs and he's going to be under savage pressure. I mean, it's insane. None of this situation is of Russell Martin's making. He inherited a lot of dross.
As his making, he took the job on. He knew what was involved. Did 7 rounds of interviews. Hell mend him. I hope everything possible goes wrong for him tomorrow.
No better man, Joe. Huh? All I'm saying is, look, I'm loving this. I'm loving every bit of it. You know, it's manna from heaven for me to watch this unfold. But I just think that when you take into consideration what he inherited as a team, and that he's supplemented that with a load of EFL standard players, and he's expected now to beat a team like Panathinaikos in the Champions League, I think the whole thing's the expectancy levels over there are just totally insane. That's my view on it. But they always were. They always will be. You know, so that's not going to change. It's just not going to change. But look, we'll park that one and we'll move on to my next point. And that one is the board's complacency at the moment. Ultimately, you know, it could cost us in the Champions League as well. Now, we have two situations here where we have Brendan Rodgers, who's going to be absolutely determined to get through to the Champions League. And he'll be pulling out all the stops and he'll be motivating his players as best he possibly can. But in the scenario that we fail to qualify for the Champions League, that gives the board a license to say that we had this 100 million in the bank for a rainy day. Here's the rainy day. We didn't qualify for the Champions League. All spending will now cease and desist. Do you feel that that's going to be the end result if we don't qualify for the Champions League, Joe?
If we qualify for the Champions League, it'll be the same. If we reach a Champions League, don't expect Celtic to be spending £20-25 million on players in the last couple of days. We reached the Champions League last season, and the only reason we brought in players in the last couple of days was because Brighton signed Matt O'Reilly. So it's self-financing. The club, they'll spend some of the money they bring in. There's Old Firm Dave. Old Firm Dave did a comment earlier about Rangers this or Rangers. Dave, Rangers died in 2012. Don't believe the record. Don't believe the BBC. Rangers died in 2012. Get over it. There is no Old Firm. I know you love the Old Firm. I know finishing ahead of Rangers means something to you, but they're dead. They wouldn't pay Her Majesty. 276 creditors were left high and dry, kaput. A new club started in playing at Brechin about 13 years ago, but that's my one and only mention to Old Firm Dave. But the Celtic board, they'll balance the books. Whatever comes in from selling players, the manager will get most of it and urge to spend it cautiously. So it's not going to make any impact. The impact will be if we fail to reach the Champions League, you could probably find Maeda or Hatate being sold. But if Celtic were genuine, if they were pushing for things, if they were showing ambition, they would have a replacement in for Kun before he was sold. They'd have two wingers ready to take on Ajax on Thursday night. As it stands, our wingers against Ajax will be Forrest, Yang and Maeda. And Maeda is also doubling up as our first choice striker as well. So, unfortunately, nothing changes at Celtic. We've seen these windows many, many times, and reaching the Champions League isn't going to bring out the chequebook. They're not going to start spending big. They're going to rub their hands and say, look at that, we've pulled in another 40 million for minimal investment.
Yeah. Just one point I'd make for you there, Joe. You know, you said they'll always balance the books. There's a massive imbalance in the books. We're top heavy with cash. So, I mean, they're not balancing the books. They're just imbalancing them with so much cash sitting in our bank account, you know? So yeah, I'll pass over to James. Yeah, I'll pass over to James and see what his take is on it. I mean, what do you reckon, James? Do you think the same thing, that even regardless if we do qualify for the Champions League, that they're still not going to spend?
I think they'll spend something if we do qualify. If we don't qualify, I think we'll lose a key player. Another one. And they'll spend the bare minimum that it takes to replace him. That'll be when you know that Rodgers is done.
They'll do a Moussa Dembele.
Rodgers campaign. Aye, pretty much. Here's the curious thing, right? And this is where I'm not torn, right? Because I know where I would rather be. But coming into Dortmund last season, I was at Dortmund and coming into the game, I heard a couple of people in front of me talking about the Europa League being on a level. And I resented the hell of the idea then, and I resent the hell of the idea now. But there is a part of me that's curious to see how well we would do in that competition. Because the way Rodgers has us set up, I don't think there are very many teams that we would need to be worried about really seriously, up all night, sweating over it, worried about it. And I would like to see us tested against the teams. I would prefer that we go to the Champions League, obviously, I would always. But let's be honest, that is as much about money as anything else. If we got the same amount of money for appearing in the Europa League, you could see a scenario where it may be good to play in that tournament and play against these teams that are just below the elite level and see how we do against them. We should be able to punch our weight against any of the teams. Obviously, I don't want to find out. I hope it doesn't happen. But there is an element of curiosity about how a good Celtic side with this manager could handle up in that tournament. I mean, the team across the side seems to almost be freakishly lucky in that tournament. But it can't all be about luck. They have got some very good results against teams in that competition. And our record is actually no terrible either when we've been in it. So I won't be suicidally depressed if we don't get through. I'll be angry. I'll be really pissed off going into the Champions League qualifiers so scandalously unprepared that we've no way through. But maybe we need a Europa League year just to find out where we really are and whether we can really punch our way.
I don't know about that. I'm wondering, guys, is Frank Brennan related to Mr. Brennan of CQN? You know, his comments seem to be very CQN-esque, let's say. But look, it is what it is in that regard. I think we know that the board is scandalously underpreparing us for this, and they're tying a hand behind Brendan Rodgers' back.
Yeah.
I think he'll qualify despite them. I think he will. I think you'll motivate his players to a level where they'll go out there and they'll win that tie. So to finish up this evening, guys, because we're coming close to finishing time, the hour is almost upon us. I just want to touch on the subject of current Celtic fan media. And us three have had a few run-ins. We'll say, well, I've had run-ins. You guys have criticized and rightly criticized Hail Hail 67. I'm going to name the site because they have a confirmed ex-Ibrox writer on their website. Joe, you were the first man to kind of let the cat out of the bag on that one. I had a run-in with another site on Thursday evening where I got sick and tired of the bullshit that was being put out in the headlines, and I tackled said author on that site on it. And he came direct to me and told me, he tried to defend his editorial standards, in which case I told him, all you're doing is pissing off Celtic fans. All you're doing is irritating them with headlines like that. All you're doing is leading them to believe that something is happening in the transfer front when it's not. I had my say there. I'm done and dusted with that. I'm not going to say it again. I'm not going to highlight that guy again. But this Gary Kirkpatrick guy, Joe, you did a great piece on that. Flesh that out a bit more for us.
I don't get bothered by it. I don't get worked up by it. I think supporters are smart enough to realise there's enough Celtic supporters who will click on Hail Hail 67. If they see Gary Boy, if they see something from Gary Boy, they'll realise what he is. Not everyone will click through to his biography, and he reveals where he's got an intense interest in Rangers, the club that died in 2012. So I don't get too bothered by it. It's interesting that Gary can't find a website that will support his knowledge of the club that he prefers. And imagine any of us, how desperate would life be if we had to try and go undercover and talk up interest in a club that we can't stand, a club that we detest. So that's the life of Gary Kirkpatrick. So I'll leave him to it. And I think it used to upset for all these click, but the clickbait sites, when somebody sees a headline, they look at it, and then within 10, 15 seconds, they realise, just like Sir David Murray, that they've been duped. They'll close it down, and that site loses credibility. A bit like James and his Wi-Fi signal tonight. But I don't know if Hail Hail 67 or anyone else has nobbled his Wi-Fi, or whether he's been kidnapped at his coffee house in Tenerife. But I don't bother about it. They're all welcome to it. Supporters, it takes a bit of time to build up a reputation, and supporters got a good idea of what they're getting in my site, a good idea of what they're getting in your site, and they know they're getting rubbish on Hail Hail 67 when Gary Boy is putting the stories together. So I'm less emotional than yourself, Eric, but I'll pass you back since James has deserted us.
A little bit quieter on the live show tonight. We had we peaked at 140 odd, I think, which isn't bad considering. And we have our usual, our usual contributors. They've been a bit quieter tonight, not as rowdy as usual, and James is back. So for the final word, I will pass over to James after I've done a little bit of housekeeping. Folks, if you're continuing to follow our podcast, do all those things that you do on YouTube, hit the like button, pass plenty of comments. Also, subscribe, like and subscribe, and keep following us. Our following is growing steadily. We're pushing towards 1,400 subscribers, which, considering we're just a podcast in its infancy, is very good. So keep it up. We really, really appreciate the support. We really appreciate the comments as well, because, we like to have a fairly healthy debate on this podcast, and we seem to be getting that. Joe seems to have quietened Dave a little bit today. He's not so boisterous as he was last week. So James, just for the final word from you there, you dropped out there a second ago. Myself and Joe were just discussing the situation with Gary Kirkpatrick at ALN67. Just give us your views on that there before we finish up.
Every single one of us has made mistakes, right? I made one yesterday and took an article down because I made a mistake in it, right? That's a mistake. That's an honest error. And we've all done it, and we will all do it. It will not be it's not the first time we've done it, and it won't be the last time we've done it. But to blatantly misrepresent what your article is about is garbage. It's no even bad standards. It's just an abuse of the reader. That's all it is. Right? We are negative at times, but we are negative in the club's best interest. When you misrepresent a story to get a negative headline to make the club look bad, that's just taking the piss. That's just attacking Celtic. And using a Celtic site to do it is absolutely reprehensible. And that is no even something that you blame on the writer, but I'm afraid you have to blame the people who pay the writer. I'm sorry, but you do. Like, you can't allow that. You can't have... Like, I remember once upon a time asking if I could write... asking our guys if I could write this for a site that wasn't about our club. Just a general interest site about another team. And I was told, we don't do that. We don't encourage that. Because how can you be objective about it? And it's true. It's a fact. I thought I could have been objective about it because I've just got to write straight news. But to do this job properly, you have to care about what it is you're writing about. You certainly cannot write about it if you're writing against your instincts and you're writing against your own affiliation. That's mad. I don't understand how that happened. I don't understand how that could happen.
Oh, it's allowed to happen.
But I do know that he... But he did deliberately misrepresent stories to get the most negative possible slant on them against their club on a Celtic site. That happened. We know it happened. We wrote about it. We all wrote about it. And at first, we were happy not to name the site and not to name the writer. But that becomes untenable when he just does it over and over again. So I says, but I can't believe that it happened in the first place. But as I said in the piece I wrote about it the other day, this room used to be not empty, right? But there were only a handful of us back at the start. And now there are sites popping up everywhere. And not all of these sites are legitimate Celtic fan sites. They call themselves that. But between AI-generated stories and all manner of other rubbish, I think that there are at least one or two that are not representing the best interests of your club, and very deliberately not representing the best interests of your club. And that's something that as fans and as readers, we're all going to have to be very conscious about. As writers, certainly we are going to call out anything that we see it. But our readers have to be more discerning about what they read as well. There are sites that are now notorious for the clickbait nature of their headlines. And you go on and you find that the story that's in the article that bears no resemblance to what's in the headline at all. And that is consistently awful on some sites. And the only way to stop them from doing it is to stop reading it. Operate a three strikes policy, if you like, right, when it comes to these sites. Let them away with once, let them away with twice. But the third time, it's just like, nah, sorry. Until you get some proper writers writing some proper stuff, forget it. As long as you're not chasing until you're not chasing clickbait headline material anymore, forget it. And we have to be a bit more discerning.
Yeah. But I think, like we've always said, guys, the cream will always rise to the top. And the best sites out there will always remain the best sites out there. And these guys, no matter how much they try to defend their...
And there are a few that are consistently brilliant. There are a few that are consistently brilliant and they remain consistently brilliant. Because they take it seriously and they've got excellent writers.
Yeah. So, look, we'll wind it up. I'm going to highlight the last comment I highlighted there from Tom Brady, the Birmingham City owner. It's great to have him on the show today. He said, and he made a very good point, if the club were actually run well to fulfill its potential, very few people would be negative. And that is an excellent point from Tom Brady in Birmingham City. And that's coming from a guy who knows how to run a football club and who now has Kyogo Furuhashi.
Definitely.
So, I'll leave it on that one, okay? All right, guys.
Good stuff, guys.
We'll talk next week, okay?
Cheers.
And we'll catch up then. Have a good one. had a few